We're going to open our Bibles to 2 Kings chapter 9, verse 21 today. We had to break off at a very tense moment in the story where Jehu, who has been freshly anointed at Ramoth-Gilead as the new king of northern Israel, has traveled 60-some miles to the city of Jezreel and has confronted the current king of northern Israel, Jehoram, along with his nephew, Ahaziah, who is the king of southern Judah. And this is the way it plays out. 2 Kings 9:21. Joram said, "Make ready." And they made ready his chariot. Then Joram, king of Israel, and Ahaziah, king of Judah, set out, each in his chariot, and went to meet Jehu, and they met him at the property of Naboth the Jezreelite. So this property is probably just on the eastern end of the city of Jezreel. The palace was apparently in the eastern end of the city of Jezreel because this property was coveted by King Ahab when he was still alive, because it was close to his palace and very beautiful. And Jezebel had manipulated the situation to get Naboth killed, executed, and the property confiscated into the properties of the royal family. Well, a curse was put on Ahab's family at that time by Elijah the prophet. And you can find that in 1 Kings chapter 21. And so this meeting between the son of Ahab and his grandson from southern Judah and the new King Jehu all take place right there at that piece of property. Verse number 22. When Joram saw Jehu, he said, "Is it peace, Jehu?" Because that's what he wants to know about. Is the war with Syria over? Do we now control Ramoth-Gilead? And Commander Jehu responded, "What peace can there be so long as the whorings and the sorceries of your mother Jezebel are so many?" So Jehu lets his own personal feelings be shown here. He hates what's been going on in northern Israel, particularly with the worship of Baal and Asherah, which the queen mother Jezebel has continued up after the death of her husband, King Ahab. And the moment he expresses it in that fashion, Jehoram knows that this is going to be an ambush and an assassination attempt. So verse 23, "Then Joram reigned about, and he fled, saying to Ahaziah, 'Treachery, O Ahaziah!'" So he wheels around in his chariot and tries to get away back into the city of Jezreel. But he doesn't make it very far. It says that Jehu drew his bow with his full strength, and he shot Joram between the shoulders so that the arrow pierced his heart, and he sank in his chariot. So the back armor is not nearly as strong as the front armor, but even at close range like this, a fully drawn bow goes right into the heart of King Jehoram, and he's dead and down in the bottom of his chariot, bleeding out. So then we move ahead a little bit, because this information probably comes later in the actual chronology, because this is a very tense moment. But we'll come back to what happens next in the tense moment after we fill in the gap here. Jehu said to Bidkar, his aide, "Take him up," meaning the dead body of Jehoram, "and throw him on the plot of ground belonging to Naboth the Jezreelite. For remember when you and I rode side by side behind Ahab his father how he who is made this pronouncement against him. So these guys, when they were a little bit younger, a little bit lower in rank, had served as attendants to King Ahab. And they were there that day when the prophet Elijah confronted King Ahab. And this is what was said that day. Let me read to you from 1 Kings 21. And I want you to think that Jehu was a witness to this conversation. He answered, that is, Elijah answered Ahab, "I have found you because you've sold yourself to do what is evil in the sight of he who is. Behold, I will bring disaster upon you. I will utterly burn you up and will cut off from Ahab every male, bond or free, in Israel. And I will make your house like the house of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, and like the house of Baasha, the son of Ahijah, for the anger to which you have provoked me and because you've made Israel sin." And of Jezebel, he who is also said, "The dog shall eat Jezebel within the walls of Jezreel. And anyone belonging to Ahab who dies in the city, the dog shall eat. And anyone of his who dies in the open country, the birds of the heaven shall eat." And so Jehu, a witness to those prophetic words, tells his aide-de-camp, his right-hand guy that was also there that day, "Take his body and throw it out in the Naboth vineyard. Let the birds eat it." Because that's exactly what God said should happen. Verse 26, "As surely as I saw yesterday the blood of Naboth and the blood of his sons, declares he who is, I will repay you on this plot of ground. Now therefore, take him up, throw him on the plot of ground in accordance with the word of he who is." So all this ironic judgment of God comes to pass there, probably on the eastern end of the city of Jezreel. Now, back to the tense moment. In our minds, we should have just now seen Jehu take out Jehoram as he's trying to ride away in his chariot as fast as he can go. Now, verse 27 says, "When Ahaziah, the king of Judah, saw this, he fled in the direction of Beth-Hagan, and Jehu pursued him and said, 'Shoot him also.'" So we end up with a chariot chase where Ahaziah, he heads south from the city of Jezreel. And he's got about 6 or 7 miles from the city of Jezreel to the ascent of Gur that goes up by Iblim. This is a pass that you can go up out of the valley of Jezreel up onto a road that will take you eventually down past Samaria or down past Shiloh. But farther down the road, you'll eventually get back to Jerusalem. So that was his original intent, is to try to ride away south toward his own country. But as he's going, they're shooting at him. And so eventually he gets hit. It says they shot him in the chariot at the ascent of Gur, which is by Iblim. So now he's been hit and he realizes that he's not going to make it all the way to safe territory to the south. So he heads off to the northwest and along a flat stretch of land toward Megiddo, which is about 9 or so miles away. So he fled to Megiddo, and that's where he died. Now, that's not the end, though, of the actual story, because he's just badly wounded at this point when he flees to Megiddo. 2 Chronicles 22 tells us, verse number 9, a little bit more of the story. Basically, after Jehu shoots and kills Jehoram, It says that he then searched for Ahaziah, because Ahaziah apparently gets away to Megiddo, mortally wounded. So he searched for Ahaziah, and he was captured while hiding in Samaria. Now, I don't believe that means the city of Samaria, but rather the country of Samaria. And so he was brought to Jehu and then put to death. So the badly wounded Ahaziah is tracked down in the city of Megiddo by the men of Jehu. And once they find him, they bring him back to Jehu, and Jehu finishes the job and kills him off. Because this is why. He is the grandson of King Ahab of northern Israel. And God has put a curse on all of the descendants of Ahab that can lay claim to the northern kingdom's throne. And so Ahaziah, even though he's king of southern Judah, he is also in line to the throne in northern Israel. Now, we'll come back to the Second Chronicles passage in a little bit with a little bit more about the Ahaziah problem. Back to 2 Kings chapter 9, verse 28. His servants, that is Ahaziah's servants, carried him in a chariot to Jerusalem and buried him in his tomb with his fathers in the city of David. So Jehu releases the body to the attendants of King Ahaziah, and his body is then returned to the city of Jerusalem and buried properly. So there is a slight exception here, I guess, to the rule about scavenging the bodies of those that are related into the kingdom of northern Israel, because he's actually the southern king right now. So a little chronology bit. In the 11th year of Joram, the son of Ahab, Ahaziah began to reign over Judah. Then we continue with the story of Jehu. When Jehu came to Jezreel, Jezebel heard of it. So this would be after he's now tracked down and killed Ahaziah. He returns back to Jezreel. This would be all accomplished within a matter of hours, probably. So Jezebel finds out that he has entered the city. So she painted her eyes and adorned her head, and then she looked out the window. So she knows what's coming. She knows she's a dead woman. So she's going to try to meet her end as a queen. So she dresses herself up in her royal robes and dresses up her face with all the cosmetics that she would normally do for a state appearance. As Jehu entered the gate, she said, and apparently she's in an upper window, she's up in a balcony, "Is it peace, you Zimri, murderer of your master?" Now, Zimri is the name of an earlier assassin. And so his name is kind of like, it's a byword for an assassin. It'd be like using the name Benedict Arnold for a traitor. So Zimri is the way that Israelis refer to an assassin. So, "Is it peace, you Zimri, you assassin, murderer of your master?" And he lifted up his face to the window and he said, "Who's on my side? Who?" And two or three eunuchs looked out at him. So palace officials, people who were supposed to be there serving the royal family, they looked down at this query, who's on Jehu's side. And he said, "Throw her down." So they threw her down. So you get the impression through the reading of all of this that the people in northern Israel didn't really like the royal family. They didn't like Ahab, they didn't like Jezebel, they didn't like Jehoram. They wanted these people gone. And so the moment that these guys have the opportunity to participate in getting rid of Jezebel, they toss her out the window. And down she goes. And when she hits the ground, it says that some of her blood spattered on the wall and on the horses, and they trampled on her. And then he went in, and he ate, and he drank. So Jezebel's dead, and he goes in to, that is, Jehu, goes into the palace to have some food and some sort of liquid to rehydrate, because he's been basically at war today. I mean, he has been killing the two kings that he believed were standing in the way of God's intentions for the beginning of his own dynasty. But as he's finishing up his meal, he then says this, verse 34. He said, "See now to this cursed woman and bury her, for she is a king's daughter." So she's not just simply married into royalty. She is a princess from the kingdom of Sidon. And so he figures there are protocols to be followed. So take her body and bury it. But, verse 36, when they went to bury her, they found no more of her than the skull and the feet and the palms of her hands. So the scavenger dogs got to her first and have ripped her to bits and left only these specific parts behind. Verse 36, when they came back and told him, he said, "Oh, this is the word of he who is, which he spoke by his prophet Elijah the Tishbite. In the territory of Jezreel, the dog shall eat the flesh of Jezebel, and the corpse of Jezebel shall be as dung on the face of the field in the territory of Jezreel, so that no one can say, 'This is Jezebel.'" So he figures this is exactly what Elisha meant when he said that Jezebel would be eaten up by dogs, because it literally happened. Now, verse 1 of chapter 10, Jehu continues with taking over the kingdom. And one of the things we've talked about many, many times is that in the Middle East, it had been the common practice that when a new dynasty came to power, all the members of the old dynasty were wiped out to make sure that they could not make claims to the throne. So chapter number 10 says, Ahab had 70 sons in Samaria. Now this time, Samaria seems to be a reference to the capital city. So Jehu wrote letters and sent them to Samaria to the rulers of the city. That's the reason why I can be pretty sure this is the capital city in reference here. To the elders and to the guardians of the sons of Ahab. And it's not just simply the sons of Ahab, it's actually his grandsons as well. And this is the text of the letter. "Now then, as soon as this letter comes to you, seeing your master's sons are with you, and there are with you chariots and horses, fortified cities also, and weapons, select the best and fittest of your master's sons, set him on his father's throne, and fight for your master's house." So he sends them a challenge, saying, "All right, you guys are the guardians of the family line, of the royal family line. Pick whoever it is that you think should be the next ruling member of that family, and then fight for him. I'll take you on." But, verse 4, they were exceedingly afraid, and they said, "Behold, the two kings could not stand before him. How then can we stand?" So he who was over the palace and he who was over the city, together with the elders of the guardians, sent to Jehu saying, "We are your servants and we will do all that you tell us. We do not make anyone king. Do whatever is good in your eyes." So their response is, "We don't want to take you on. We don't want to fight with you. You tell us what you want us to do next. So he wrote them a second letter saying, if you are on my side and if you are ready to obey me, take the heads of your master's sons and come to me at Jezreel tomorrow at this time. Now, the king's sons, 70 persons, were with the great men of the city who were bringing them up. And as soon as the letter came to them, they took the king's sons and slaughtered them, 70 persons, and put their heads in baskets and sent them to him at Jezreel. When the messenger came and told him, they've brought the heads of the king's sons, he said, lay them in two heaps at the entrance of the gate until morning. So you can see, these guys also didn't really care for the Omride dynasty, the dynasty that started with Omri, passed to King Ahab, and then from him to Jehoram. They wanted this family gone. And they were also afraid to stand up against this commander of the Israeli army that has now become the new king, lest they be killed as protectors of the royal family. So they execute all 70 of the heirs to the throne and send their heads in baskets to Jezreel, where Jehu has them piled up in two piles on either side, apparently, of the road that approaches the city gate. Verse number 9. Then, in the morning, when he went out, he stood and he said to all the people, you are innocent. It was I who conspired against my master and killed him. But who struck down all these? Know then that there shall fall to the earth nothing of the word of he who is, which he who is spoke concerning the house of Ahab, for he who is has done what he said by his prophet Elijah. And so Jehu struck down all who remained of the house of Ahab in Jezreel, all his great men and his close friends and his priests, until he had left none remaining. So he basically tells the people, yeah, I'm the one that started this new dynasty by killing my former boss, King Jehoram. But other people have joined in with making me king by killing off all of the heirs to the throne. So he's presenting to them the inevitability of his dynasty getting started. And he purges a few more of the supporters there in the city of Jezreel. And then, verse 12, he set out and went to Samaria. And on the way, when he was at Beth Eked of the shepherds, Jehu met the relatives of Ahaziah, king of Judah. All right, so now he's on the road from Jezreel to Samaria. It's about a day's trip. And along that road, because of an information blackout that he's got going, he meets some people who haven't a clue of what just happened. These are relatives of Ahaziah who have come north to check up on King Ahaziah of southern Judah. So that tells us that his body has not yet been released and sent south. So the part of the story that we told a little while ago was a little ahead of the timing. So he meets these people on the road. They're heading north, and he said, who are you? And they answered, we are the relatives of Ahaziah. We came down to visit the royal princes and the sons of the queen mother. Remember, the royal family in northern Israel is tied in with the royal family from southern Judah. And so these guys are all saying, well, we're coming to check on, you know, everybody from both sides of the family. Jehu said, take them alive. And they took them alive, and then they slaughtered them at the pit of Beth Eked, 42 persons, and he spared none of them. And this is another way that he controls his own dynasty's start to make sure that he is not going to be challenged from the southern kingdom, because the northern kingdom was intimately and familially tied into the southern kingdom's royal family as well. Now, the next story we'll just barely get started on today is this, verse 15. When he departed from there, he met Jehonadab, the son of Rechab, coming to meet him. And he greeted him and said to him, "Is your heart true to my heart as mine is to yours?" Now, these guys have probably known each other in the past. Remember that Jehu is a top commander in the Israeli military. And so he probably would have been well known to people, especially those living around the capital city. And so he's basically saying, "Are you on the same page as me?" And Jehonadab answered, "It is." And Jehu said, "Well, if it is, give me your hand." So he gave him his hand, and Jehu took him up with him into the chariot. And then he said, "Come with me and see my zeal for he who is." Now, Jehonadab is a follower of the one true God, and Jehu knows that. And apparently, Jehu has had his fill of the false faith of the Ahab and Jezebel family. That is the faith in Baal and Asherah. And so he sees in Jehonadab someone that he wants to impress with the purging of everything of this horrendous royal family of Ahab and Jezebel. So he invites Jehonadab to join him in the next stage of his securing power, and that is to eradicate the worship of Baal and Asherah inside the capital city of Samaria. And we're out of time, so we'll take up that next part of the story the next time we get into God's Word.